Hello, this is Farah Yurduzu for Jerry Pippin Radio Show, and tonight I'm at Roswell, New Mexico. We are on the last night of the Roswell UFO Conference. Right now, my guest is my dear friend, Peter Robbins. Hi, Peter. Welcome.
Great to be with you, Farah.
So, Peter, we had a wonderful weekend all together with a group of extremely interesting speakers, but your position, your role this year in this event is completely different. So, what happened? Tell us everything.
Well, for the first time in my long years in the field of serious UFO studies, I was hired, in this case by the city of Roswell, New Mexico, to coordinate, oversee, liaison a very big event, but not to lecture. And some of my friends have had some fun with me as a joke, saying, oh good, you are getting paid not to talk, that is good. But in fact, it has been a real honor and a tremendous challenge. For 6 months now, every Friday, I have met sometimes 2-3 hours at a time with the festival committee and the people putting together the conference, but by the telephone conference call. Increasingly, it has become a full-time job. And I have lost a little track of time. You know, it has been an amazingly busy week, part of which has been getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to do the big shows on the East Coast and coordinate them with our time out here. But it has been a very satisfying challenge. We have come from a conference with a tremendous diversity of opinion and points of view. Tremendous. So much so that many of us were really quite taken aback by our colleagues' points of view. And it all culminated this afternoon, as you know, as a central character in this, in a very unique panel discussion with good questions put forward by our audience and us speakers going at it honestly in a great dialogue in the American tradition of a free exchange of ideas in the heart of a city that is the emblem of the UFO story cover-up implications. And a lovely town it is, with many kind people. We have worked hard, we have played kind of hard, and I am very proud of us all. I think we have done a wonderful job, and I am most intrigued at how this evolves in the future. I wish the city of Roswell all the best, and I think they are making a true effort as a community to try to become a vanguard location for educating people about UFOs and for having fun and celebrating how deeply ingrained the subjects of UFOs and aliens have become in popular culture. For me, I come from a kind of ivory tower mentality. I like to think of myself as a serious scholar, as somebody who looks down on all the silly souvenirs and the t-shirts and the funny masks and things. But over time, my view has changed a little. And it goes like this. If indeed UFOs are real, aliens are real, this is a paradigm-shifting point of view unlike anything else in human history. And for many of our friends, brothers and sisters, it is the most intimidating, confounding, challenging thing they will ever have to face. There is an old American saying called whistling past a graveyard. What it means is when you are nervous, you make a joke, you try to have a good attitude. And culturally, the entire Western world, with exceptions changing, has this attitude about UFOs and their implications. And so I now have grown into a point of view where a festival, and this is what this was. It was a big celebration with many silly things, a carnival kind of atmosphere, things for children, very good, nice. And at the other end, a serious study conference. Also another one over at the UFO Museum. So we have had both extremes, but I think for many people, this is the only way they can begin to look at it seriously or hold it at a distance of an arm because if it is too real, it will upset them too much.
Yes, right now in Roswell, in Roswell town, we are in a 24 hours open restaurant and we are still talking about at midnight UFOs. Today's panel was very meaningful because there were 12 people, 12 UFO researchers from different backgrounds, in every meaning, different ways of life. So there was the basic topic was secular ufology, religious ufology. In fact, this is not something official. Until up today, nobody talked about a secular ufology or religious ufology, but today it was born by itself. And we were in the middle. I was trying to keep everything down and make a peace, and you were doing the same thing as the moderator. So, what did you feel? What happened from your point? Because you were not with us, you were not on the stage, but you were the moderator. So, I really don't want to be in your place.
Yeah, there were moments I didn't want to be in my place. Ultimately, though, it was a wonderful challenge and a real education. Like you said, we experienced something that you and I, working at different conferences, networking with different researchers, doing our work, have not confronted as such. Most of us in our research community are either, we take a cultural point of view on this, a scientific background, or say like our friend and colleague Rich Dolan, an historic background. Karen Dolan, who happens to be his wife, but as an independent individual, is pioneering a terribly important area of how media depictions of UFOs and aliens can desensitize children in a way that may be detrimental in the future. But some of our colleagues today, and again, you and I are in the Northeast. We are in the Southwest now. Things are different. To some degree, their point of view, I knew it intellectually, some of these talks might be around this, but today we were hit by several talks where the view was, you know, your interpretation of UFOs as extraterrestrials, or this is a scientific phenomena, or, you know, your historic look at it. These are all interesting but outdated points of view. And the fact is that these appearances, manifestations, whatever you want to call them, are really, it is all aspects of what is written in the Old Testament. This is revelations, this is signs and portents, these are minions of the devil, and that is what it is. That is not like one of the things it may be, which was problematic for me, that I respect anyone's beliefs, whatever they are, to hold them, as long as they do not hurt another person. You are free. I would defend your right to have an extreme belief that I don't believe in. For me, the line was drawn when the implication was, this is the truth. Your point of view is interesting. At best, it is a misunderstanding. At worst, you are playing into the hands of demons. The real truth is in the Bible. And moderating a panel where we had a full range of opinion from pragmatic, scholarly, scientific, historic, esoteric, somebody like our friend Greg Bishop, who is good at pioneering all the fringe areas, alternate aspects of UFO studies. You are a true pioneer in America on discussing this situation in a very young country from the point of view of an ancient culture. And I was concerned first that we would not have an opportunity to really get to a truth, that we might hurt feelings, that some of our Christian brothers and sisters might feel slighted, or that it might become mean-spirited. But I think everybody rose to a really quality level of discourse. And once we started to roll, the exchange of ideas and the questions put forward by the audience and the questions and observations we made on each other raised to a very high level the dialogue. And ultimately, from the point of view of moderating a panel, and I have been on many panels, but I have not been the moderator, I was very proud of everybody. I thought we elevated ourselves. We all came away thinking a little more about things maybe than we didn't, whatever our view or our established, you know, point when we went in. It was a great note to end this conference on. And I think we all go away feeling like we have added to this extraordinarily complex and often distorted field of study, which is very serious, but which most people don't realize is so serious.
You know what? That's the case. We are dealing with an unknown in many ways. In order to get some light, some clear vision, we have to knock all the doors. This can be science, basically, of course. This can be religions, not only one, two religion. This can be esoteric or maybe occult sciences. This can be social sciences. This can be linguistics, art, many things. So anything related to word, anything related to human beings is going to be a key in order to understand the UFO mystery. So there are many doors. We have to knock. We have to open each door. We have to check inside of every room. If we find something valuable which works for us, let's use it. If not, let's forget about it. That's so simple.
You know, I guess I am best known in this field, although I have a number of specialty areas that I have explored, none more than the work I am so proud to have done with Bud Hopkins over many years on the abduction phenomena. But as a published writer, as a lecturer, I'm probably best known for my work helping to clarify what is arguably the most important single UFO incident, perhaps next to Roswell, and that is the Rendlesham Forest incident in England. And I pursued this story like a police officer, very pragmatic. I was looking for the kinds of evidence you could bring into a court of law and then triangulate around it. Here is physical evidence that supports anecdotal evidence that is backed up by historic evidence that is underscored by government documents, etc. et al. And what I was seeing over the past few days, and who am I to say that somebody else is on the wrong path in an area where none of us know the real truth? We don't. But when belief is substituted for what I would respectably call evidence or proofs, even then, who am I to say you are wrong and I am right? I think in a very good way, what I am trying to say here is when we are confronted, even in this tight area of unusual studies, with a point of view that challenges our point of view, that we must rise to address in an articulate way, we have an opportunity, or we are put upon, to be even more clear in our communications and our thinking and the way we put forward a point of view to our colleagues and an audience. And although that can be tiring, trying, it can make you feel frustrated because, well, I thought I had made this clear, you know, in this book or in this article or in this lecture, when you are dealing with something as ethereal as mercury or gossamer or air or dust, which sometimes this subject seems like, you are called upon to communicate clearly and to also be a good listener, and I guess ultimately to respect what you do not understand, and that none of us can fully wrap our head around. You know, I am in this work now more than 30 years, and what I can tell you for sure is that I'm not absolutely sure what is going on. I can ask much better questions than most people. I can engage in better educated speculation. I even have some thoughts, ideas about the nature of certain aspects of this, the abduction phenomena, trace cases where physiological changes happen to organic matter. But I don't know exactly what is going on, and I'm very clear about that. And I guess sometimes I am a bit irritated or taken aback when a colleague or a fellow researcher says, let me explain to you exactly what is going on. There are 14 different kinds of aliens that are visiting Earth. The Alpha Centaurians have been coming here for 243,000 years. They are in these kind of ships. They eat glass, dust, and mice. They have big noses that come out to you, and so on. You know, we've all been there. And at a certain point, you may be called on for somebody who is at a conference and explaining this to you, and you will say, excuse me, with all due respect, how do you know this? There are only several things they can say. I know it because they told me. I know it because when they took me away, this is what I saw on the big screen. I know it because I dreamt it. I know it because a good friend of mine told it to me, and I trust them, and they have been on many spaceships. I know it because I've just been released from a mental institution. I mean, who knows? But they are all saying I know the unknowable.
One way or another, since 1947, ufology became a part of history of human, history of the world. So maybe extraterrestrials will never reveal their real identity. Maybe this is the goal. Maybe this is our homework. Maybe the task for us is to keep doing this research, and it is something very personal. Maybe we will find out the reality, maybe not. Because it seems that the time has been passing, and in Turkish language we have an expression, being bright by yourself, buying the wedding dress even though you don't have the groom. I hope we are not in that position.
Brilliantly stated. I have a feeling that, you know, right now a lot of students of the esoteric, of ancient traditions, of Mayan culture, of fundamentalist backgrounds in Christian theology, general New Agers, there is much talk about 2012, that this is the end of the Mayan calendar, and that anything from, you know, revelations, the return of Jesus, signs and portents in the sky, the destruction of the earth, the age of Aquarius will happen. I, frankly, will not be holding my breath. I feel also that there will be many, many, many people who are well-educated, who are mystical, who are religious, who follow ancient traditions, who are students of, again, the Mayan culture, who will be very upset when the world does not burst into flames, when all mouths utter the same name, when, you know, all the polar caps melt and dogs become cats, and it's just another year. I think they will be very upset. We human beings, you know, we love our mythologies, our lores, our legends. And again, I may be the one saying, you know, as my house sinks into the ground, gee, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
Well, one way or another, I enjoyed every moment of this Roswell weekend, and I love this town, I love the people. I never felt as an alien in Roswell, because it is amazing. So, Peter Robbins, are we coming back next year?
You know what? I have a very strong intuition that a number of us will, and I number very high on that list, Farah Yorzu and Peter Robbins. I think we will be back, not just because we are helping to do the good work that needs to be done in a much more human way. Whatever is going on with the aliens is going on. We can only guess, we can study, we can deduce, but what we do know something about is the human beings. And I can tell you for a fact, you and I have made some very good friends here. And it has enriched our life, and I think we have enriched their life. And I think we will be invited back next year. And maybe, about a year from now, be sitting here over your fish and chips, reminiscing about the 2009 festival and conference.
That's great, Peter. You know what? When I first moved to New York City, you were the first person that I met in UFO field. You are my first New Yorker UFO-related friend. And if this is the goal for me, to find such a good friend just like you, thanks to UFOs, so I'm ready. So thank you very much for this interview. Do you have one more message for Jerry Pippen Radio Show listeners?
Well, first, I just want to say hi to Jerry, who I hardly got to see this weekend because we were so busy. For me, Jerry Pippen is one of the absolute rocks of consistency, of value in getting out all kinds of information on these important, let me say, outsider topics, especially in UFO studies. Jerry, you are a dear friend. You are somebody I respect and admire. You reach over a million people with your shows and your hard work. We salute you, Farah and I. And I also wanted to say to you, my good friend across the table, I am so happy I have you as a friend. And you know, I visited Istanbul when I was young, a city I love very much, and it is wonderful to have a friend who grew up there, and I expect we will be conducting adventures like this when we are gray-haired and rickety and sitting at this table 40 years from now with the flying saucers in the parking lot and an alien serving us a veggie burger.
Good idea, Peter. Thank you very much for sharing this interview with us. Have a lovely weekend. Thank you. Bye-bye.